This is the operator. The recording has now begun.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everybody, on today's SDI Trademark Clearinghouse call. We have David Maher, Jeff Eckhouse, Zahid Jamil, John Nebbett, Kathy Kleinman, Konstantinos Komaitis, Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, Alan Greenberg, Robin Gross. From staff, we have Liz Gaster, Amy Statos, Margie Milam, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. And we have apologies from Wendy Seltzer. If I could please also remind everyone, please to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, David.
Hey, thank you. This is our last teleconference before the due date of our our first report. And I think looking at our chart, we have substantial amounts of consensus as that we move right on to the numbers where there is no consensus, unless there's an objection or if someone has something to say about numbers 1, 2, and 3, I think we can. Okay, Jeff?
Sorry, I just want to be clear. It's Jeff Beckhouse. This, I don't have an objection. I just had, just going back, I don't know if I missed this, but David, could you explain just what's expected or in what format we'll be submitting this so that I'm just trying to figure out, so what it will look like, what we're going to submit to the board, and does it need to be drafted? Do we have time for that? How will that work? If you could just quickly go over that. I don't know if you have or if you were maybe saving that for later. I'll be quiet.
No, that's a good question. As I mentioned in the last call, my understanding is that we owe some kind of report to the GNSO Council on Monday, December 7th. Obviously, there is not time for the group to have a teleconference or even, in all likelihood, pardon me, not likely to be much opportunity for comments on the report. What I'm expecting is that staff will take the chart that we have here, the straw man proposal, and convert that into a report item by item. I hope that staff will be able to circulate that to this group this weekend so that if people see an area where either they disagree or need to file some kind of separate statement, they'll have some time to do that. Having said that, it may be that Monday, December 7th, is unrealistic, and the council has already been alerted to the possibility that we will need some extra time. I guess I would not be surprised if we do need some time, but we really need to move ahead, and unless staff has some comment on that schedule, I think that's the way we ought to go. Zahid, you have your hand raised.
Thank you. Yes, just wanted to come in, and since we're sort of doing a general discussion, I've just sent something around, and I don't think that expect to have seen it yet, but we've had some discussion in the DC, and basically, at this point in time, the way the clearinghouse is looking, we have serious and very important concerns, that some of them have been voiced by me earlier. Some of them are actually in the email that I've circulated. And basically, just wanted to sort of add that we don't see this as a trademark solution at all. We don't see it addressing any of the right protection mechanisms. And if the registries want this because it helps them, that's fine, because it helps them in Sunrise and probably helps them in IP claims, because that's what reduces the cost. But as far as brand holders are concerned, from a DC point of view, large brand owners we've interacted in the last 2 days, and other members of the DC, everybody feels that, with the exception of that one aspect, which doesn't really help trademarks or rights protecting mechanisms, but it's a functionality issue, that's fine, but it doesn't address the trademark issue. And that is something that we would like loudly and clearly to be mentioned in the report from our perspective. And so we don't see this as a solution to any of the concerns. Thank you.
Okay. You'll obviously have an opportunity to make that as your as minority report. Alan?
Yeah, I just would like a clarification now or in writing later of whether they believe the staff report, the staff proposal, not that it's on the table right now, but I'd just like to know, did they believe that clearinghouse addressed the issues, or is it both of them and perhaps the IRT also that don't address the issues?
I think that, good two questions. Does the staff proposal meet our concerns? No, it doesn't. Does the IRT IP clearinghouse and the way it was merged with GPM and others and the tapestry of the IRT? Yes, it did, because it was a compromise and there were other elements that did protect. However, this thing sort of standing alone out there in the wilderness on its own doesn't address the defensive registration pre-launch concerns of the trademark holders, and that's the main issue. How do you address the trademark problem by this entire thing? We also see this as something we're going to have to pay for. At least that's what it seems like it's going to be. And there's one other concern that somebody raised, and I think this is useful, is that if you're not in this IP clearinghouse, no matter whether you think it's useful or not, you could be actually finding yourself in the position where people say that, oh, so you haven't been vigilant enough about protecting a trademark. So that's the concern as well.
Okay, thank you. I think we ought to move on then to the areas where there is clearly there's an absence of consensus at this time. And looking at our chart, it appears to me that is number four. The question whether the trademark clearinghouse will be limited to nationally registered marks will also include common law marks, and on the question where marks are registered in a jurisdiction where there's no validation. Does anyone want to comment on that? Kathy, go ahead.
Sure. Is Jeff Newman on the call?
No, he's not.
Oh, okay, because I was wondering if we could continue the discussion of the email that Jeff was having. Mark, was it with you? And just kind of hear where that is. It's a fascinating discussion.
Alan?
I was basically going to raise the same issue, that there was a discussion started on will registries have to use the ones from jurisdictions that don't do validation, and I also asked the question of can the clearinghouse definitively identify which jurisdictions do and which don't, and will it be allowed to put that in the claims notice? So I think we need some answers before from the IP people before we can understand what it means to say include all registrations in the clearinghouse.
Paul, go ahead.
I don't think Mark's on, so I think it's up to me today. I think the short answer to Jeff's question would be, and again, I've not run this past the IPC, but this is what I think, that it would be what we've talked about in the past for sunrises, which is a registry could choose to use it or not use it for sunrises based upon their charter restrictions. So say, for example, somebody wants to launch the .Europe, and they are only going to allow people who live in Europe to have a .Europe domain name, then we think that it's perfectly fine for that registry to exclude all data except for European registrations having national effect, whether that's a CTM registration or one at a national level. The second question has to do with IP claims. The second question, and in that situation, we would say that it is monumentally unfair. Whoa, that's not me. We would say that it's monumentally unfair to put out an IP claims notice that a potential registrant would look at and have it not be as complete as possible, such that they think, well, okay, I've looked at the IP claims. This seems safe to me. They've register a domain name and they're immediately sued in Europe or some other emerging market where perhaps they do not do the kind of analysis that we do in the U.S. Or Canada. And so we think that the better position is to include all the data, and you know, if we want to beef up the notice in some way that says, you know, listen, not everybody, you know, examines at the same level of specificity, and that could affect your rights, and you may want to seek counsel. I mean, I have no problem making that notice as helpful as possible, and I think that's the way to handle it.
Okay, thank you. I just from the it's too bad Jeff is not on, but from the standpoint of the registries, we don't want to be in the position of determining which jurisdiction conducts an examination of marks and which jurisdictions just register anything that comes in the mail. From a registry standpoint, we'd like to have an automatic process that doesn't put us in the middle. Jeff, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I do. Thanks, Dave. I just want to echo your point because my question was even simpler. Maybe I know, you know, some Paul, I'm sure you have like experience and you know, you guys internally say, oh, this country does a substantive review, this one doesn't. I mean, I don't think that there is like a publicly available list that says this one does, this one doesn't, and there's no, you know, there's nothing that states what it is, and it would be tough, as David said, as, you know, for the registry or for somebody who is not knee-deep in this to say, oh, this is, you know, this region does or this region doesn't, and I don't, you know, maybe it's changing all the time, so I think it would be very difficult since there's no, let's call it, I'm putting air quotes around, like, official list that says what's substantive and what isn't. So unless there's something that some people publish, I don't know, maybe is there something out there?
Not that I'm aware of. Alan?
That comes close to what I was going to say. I specifically asked the question, can the clearinghouse identify and flag it so the registry doesn't have to make a decision based on the name of the jurisdiction? However, I'll point out that whoever is suggesting that we only register ones from places that do validation, I would like to know how they think that clearinghouse will get that list if such a list doesn't exist. Otherwise, we're having a moot discussion if we're saying the clearinghouse should make a should allow or disallow certain marks based on the jurisdiction, but we can't tell you which is which. Clearly, the UDRP providers and the URS provider must have a way of finding out whether validation is done or not, but that's on a case-by-case and judgment call basis, perhaps. So if we can't distinguish between them, it's a moot discussion. And if we can, is it something we can rely on and won't be sued over?
Kathy?
We know this is the big issue, and it's been the big sticking point, and CSG. And we've taken this back. We've taken this offline. We've really thought hard about it. So we wanted to share with you where we are on this, which is that we are first. The answer to Alan's question is, I think among attorneys who do a lot of this work, the lists are already there. They're in their heads. I think it's something that could be formalized quickly and fairly easily, and, in fact, I'm going to try to go ahead and do that. But with a few minor changes, which I think everybody will find fairly minor, we're willing to go ahead, and CSG is willing to go ahead and sign off on the nationally registered marks from all jurisdictions. Here are the very few changes. One is, I think the word where it says including countries where there's no validation, I think the word we've been using is substantive review. I think validation means a lot of things, including just getting the trademark. So I'd like to go back to the word substantive review, where someone, you just pay a fee, and basically if it's not already there, they give you the trademark.
Why do we need the clause at all in that case?
I think it helps explain things. Okay, second thing is the distinction that Paul just made about Sunrise versus IP claims, and that the registries will have the discretion to work with those jurisdictions that do conduct substantive review. Paul, unless I'm misinterpreting that was okay for the registries to make that kind of choice, the kind of choice Jeff Newman was asking for.
I would say that it's okay as long as that corresponds to a charter restriction. So say for... Does that make sense?
No, it doesn't address Jeff's question.
And it doesn't make sense to me either.
He doesn't want to. He doesn't want to have to do a sunrise on someone who is who has registered the name in a place where you pay your $12 and you get the name.
So are we talking about IP claims? We're talking about sunrise.
Well, he
sunrise.
The issue is both, and he was asking for answers on both. Sunrise is clearly the more critical one.
John?
Yeah, I would have significant concerns, Paul, with limiting it to a charter. For example, if you look at davidsregistry.org, there's no charter that it has to be a nonprofit. It's a generic TLD.org, and if .org, when it rolled out, said that it only wanted to use list, the clearinghouse list for whatever countries that it wanted to, for whatever reason it wanted to, it should be able to do that.
Yeah, my concern is just liability for the registries if they pick and choose like that.
But that's the registry's choice, right? The registry chooses to use everything in the clearinghouse because they don't want to pick and choose. That's fine. If they choose not to have, if they choose for whatever reason they don't want to have trademarks that aren't approved by a country that they don't feel have a substantive review process, then they choose to do that. It's up to them.
So we're talking about potentially excluding 500 million Europeans.
That's not what I said. I said it's up to the registry, and you're saying it's up to the registry only if they have a charter exemption for that.
Right.
And I'm saying that's too limited.
No, I agree with John. It should be the choice of the registry as to how to use it. From my standpoint as a registry, clearly the safe thing to do is to take everything that comes in from the clearinghouse and pass it along or use it.
Are you talking IP claims or Sunrise, David?
Well, certainly for IP claims.
Yeah.
Sunrise, I think, is a somewhat different situation where, regardless of the charter provision, a registry should be able to make its own choice as to how to use it.
And this is Paul again. And would that include a choice not to use it at all?
Well, registries that in the past have had very successful sunrise processes. And I look at this trademark clearinghouse as strictly a source of data. So it seems to me that when a new registry proposes a sunrise process, they will undoubtedly look to the successful models in the past. They may have to tailor them to their particular needs, but it seems to me at that point a registry should be able to look to the clearinghouse simply as a repository of useful data, and it would then be used in accordance with the particular procedures of the sunrise of that particular registry.
Yeah, this is... I hate to do this, but this is the problem with cutting out the globally protected marks list, because without the globally protected marks list...
Okay.
No, let me finish. Let me finish, please. Everybody else got a chance to talk. Without the globally protected marks list, this creates a loophole. So if I'm a registry, I say, okay, I have to choose between an IP claim service or a Sunrise. I choose Sunrise, and I choose only to accept registrations from Thailand, which then results in no pre-launch protection for trademarks at all, in essence, except for unless you happen to have a registration in Thailand. Does that make sense?
Well,
and so if there's no restriction on what can be excluded, we have a loophole. And without the GPML, we have no protection for brand owners in this space.
Well,
there's nothing left.
Okay.
And so that's why I think it has to be based upon if there is a charter restriction. If I'm .Berlin and I say I'm only going to allow people who live in Berlin to have a .Berlin, then it makes sense. Then I'm only going to take registrations from Germany, where there's a Berlin, and Ohio, where there's a Berlin, right? Places like that, where there's a city called Berlin, then I'll take those and I'll exclude everything else. A charter restriction makes sense. A wide open loophole makes no sense.
Well, introducing the problem of the GPML, I have said previously it's not out of scope, but I think it's beside the point here. The GPML is not part of the board, or the staff proposal. There's no way to introduce it except as a minority position, which you're welcome to do. But I don't think it is relevant to the question of how the eligible marks question is being asked. We have a lot of hands up. Kathy?
I would, thanks. I had one more thing, which was, so again, the changing of wording for substantive review, the resolution of this issue that we're debating now, and the third was that that Paul and I, Paul agreed to go offline with me again to revise the notice so that we can put in some of the language that he was suggesting into the IP claims notice to notify people about jurisdictions that do review and jurisdictions that don't. Just kind of wanted to finish the thought there.
Okay, John?
I'll pass for now.
Okay, Alan?
A couple of things. Right now, if a registry does a sunrise, they compile or at least set the rules for how the database is compiled that's used in the sunrise. So they, at this point, can pick and choose if they take Benelux registrations or not to include in their list. I am presuming if they can do that independently today, they could do the same thing. I understand the Thailand issue, but in practice they could do it with no problem. So I don't think this changes it as long as we don't make rules against it. With regard to the raising the issue of the GPML, that was raised at one of our early meetings. I sent out some questions which nobody has addressed, certainly not in the IPC. The GPML was a much wider thing than we're talking about here because it was post-launch also. If someone wants to propose the concept of a GPML, hopefully with a new name, that is applicable only to pre-launch sunrises but must be used by all registries,
well,
then they should put some words on it.
Alan, we're getting way off the point.
Yeah, I'm just saying if someone wants...
I don't want to...
Okay.
I really don't want to get into a discussion of the GPML.
No.
There's a clear lack of consensus.
No.
David... The people who...
Sorry, David, I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying if in the minority report or offline they want to do it, they shouldn't use those words, those letters which had a much wider meaning. Talk about what they're looking for in the sunrise or pre-launch issue.
Okay.
Sorry.
Zahid.
First of all, I think that it's difficult to pick and choose. If registries today can do this, there are fewer of them. If it's a new GTLD that's going to go live, you're going to have hundreds. That's what people are saying. If that's the case, then we need to make sure these rules are pretty rigid, and we can't have that much disparity across the GTLDs and the registries. I see ALAC, ITC, and the DC at least, and I'm saying that now, want to talk about the GPML. I would... think that that's not a clear lack of consensus, and these guys aren't in minority. There's three very important people, you know, representatives here who want to talk about it, and I think that they should be able to. One thing I'd like to propose is if it's not going to be a GPML or a trademark list, could we talk about a victims list? Could we talk about somebody who could actually show it? It doesn't have to be trademark and brand holders. It could be for a consumer protection purpose. Those people who have been abused against previously, and if they can show that proof, could they be on a list, and could that work?
Okay, we're really getting far from the point. I have no objection to people in their minority reports suggesting new approaches, but we have to remember that we're subject to some constraints here. Either we have a consensus on something different than the staff proposed, or the staff goes back to its default position. In a minority report, you're welcome to tell staff that they ought to do things differently, but but that's not the framework in which we're working. Paul.
Sorry, can I respond to that?
Sure.
My understanding from the GNSSA conference call was that staff had said that it is not a default position, that the staff proposal is not a default position. If somebody on staff could clarify that, and maybe I'm wrong, but my understanding from the previous GNSSA conference call was that it's not a default position.
Margie, do you want to respond?
I wanted to refer back to the letter from the board. The board did not say that it was a default position. It said that it would consider, I'd have to look at the exact language, but it said something else, consider all the input and make the decision. So I think that's right.
Okay. Well, I stand corrected. One just before Paul speaks, Margie, could you make sure that the word validation is changed to substantive review?
Thank you, Dave.
Okay.
Paul.
And this is just for the record. I know it's obvious, but there is no consensus on the part of the IPC to a process that would allow registries to exclude from Sunrise processes trademarks unless it was tied to a charter restriction.
Okay, that's clear enough. Anyone else?
Yeah, it's Jeff Eckhouse. Yeah, I'm sorry, Paul, can you, I guess I'm naive. Can you explain what you mean by that charter restriction, that last piece? I'm sorry.
Sure. That just goes back to what I was saying about if there is something in the charter that is geographic in nature, or say it was along product lines, say I was launching the Dot shoes, I could say for Sunrise purposes, since my charter will only allow me to have registrants that are in the shoe business, I will exclude all trademarks that are not in International Class 25, for example, because there's no point in considering those for a Sunrise because people can't own my domain names anyways. That's perfectly acceptable and makes sense. But the wide open, the registry can pick and choose from which trademark registries they will take data or not accept data without any sort of limitation at all. That's not acceptable.
Okay, thanks for that clarification.
Okay, Kathy?
I just wanted to, putting my thoughts together. In our agreement to go forward with nationally registered marks from all jurisdictions, the NCSG did ask me to specifically support what Jeff Newman had put forward. And, Paul, I'm not sure there may be a middle ground here, which is that we support the idea of a difference between the Sunrise and the IP claims. That's something that's been talked about before, the different uses, that all the marks be used in the IP claims and that we take care of it in the notice. And, Paul, hopefully you and I can write some language for that and bring it back to the group and finish that. On the Sunrise, we do support the ability to differentiate based on charter. The Dot shoe is the one we've talked about since the beginning of time in the STI. But Jeff is proposing, I've gone back to his email, and he's proposing that not a broad ability to differentiate, but here's his language. We should not be forced to give recognition in a Sunrise period. He has an IP claims period, too. In a Sunrise period to registrations in countries that do not undergo substantive review. And I wanted to see whether that narrow requirement, restriction, discretion would be okay with the IPC and the BC, because it seems to make sense to me that if you're talking about reserving domain names, this reservation of domain names in the Sunrise, that you have that ability to make some amount of choice over not choosing Thailand necessarily, but not choosing Benelux either.
Anyone want to respond to that?
This is Paul. I'm happy to. The problem is, where do we draw the line? We say that don't undertake substantive review. What does that mean? In whose opinion? Are we prepared to exclude almost 500 million Europeans because we take the position that OHIM does a bad job compared to the United States or Canada in reviewing their marks? It creates a loophole that is bigger than the RPM itself.
Go ahead.
I think this is going to get shut down by the GATT. We have to be sensitive. If we're reaching a consensus, it's got to make sense for other people who are going to be involved in the process of getting it implemented. We know that the governments won't like this. That's just one. I mean, I would like to echo what Paul has said and, in addition, add something that I said earlier. We need to be careful here.
Alan.
I would really like to know if the sunrises that have happened to date have excluded all European countries or not. I mean, are we just making up those words, or is that strongly felt by registries? I've heard some people say all European countries and some people say Benelux registrations, and I'd really like to understand the difference in what real sunrises have done.
Oh, Constantinos.
Yes, I'm not sure, and I don't want to speak on Jeff's behalf, but I thought that he was saying that they excluded the Benelux, and I really cannot understand why we need to exclude the whole of the European Union. The European Union is conducting substantive reviews when it comes to their community trademarks, and I can basically confirm that, being located in the European Union, there is not even a question of whether the review is substantive. And when the community trademark was introduced, especially in the European Union, the European Union said that substantive reviews would be undertaken in order to determine whether a mark is valid or not. So I don't think that we're talking about 500,000 or million Europeans here.
Paul.
Then we need to define it, because the European Union does not examine on relative grounds. They only look to see whether or not the trademark can function as a mark. They do not compare it against the registry to see if somebody else is already on the registry. And so they may conduct a substantive review, but it's not as substantive as the U.S. or Canada. And so we have to draw the line in the sand some way. We have to put, if we're going to do something like this, which I don't think we should, but if we are, we need to define what it is we're talking about. Because if we do it loosely, we could end up excluding 500 million Europeans when all we really want to do is exclude Benelux.
And Tunisia.
Well, I think, Kathy, go ahead.
Would there be agreement that, would anyone disagree that registries should be able, could in a sunrise choose between countries, maybe national regions, that conduct any type of substantive review versus those that you just pay your fee and you get it as long as an identical mark's not already registered? Is that something we can agree to? I don't think that's disenfranchising Europe, and we can write it that way. There's no intent to do that.
This has
to do with those of us who lived through the race to Tunisia, where you paid your fee and you got it, and there was no evaluation, there was no nothing.
Could I interject something here? I have the feeling that we're getting far away from an area where there really is consensus. My understanding of the consensus as of today is that all nationally and internationally registered marks and common law rights will be entered into this database. Is there anything?
David, sorry, this is Constantinos. I don't think we agreed on the common law rights.
Okay, is it common law rights that have been court validated?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, that's what I meant. If we agree on that, do we at this point have to make a decision about how a particular new registry uses this database? Shouldn't we say that there is a consensus on what goes in it? and have a separate issue as to the way it's used. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, Mark?
Sorry to be late. Yeah, I think that's a really good approach, David.
Okay. let the notes reflect that. Okay, let's move on then to the identical match question.
David, it's Mark. Can you repeat that one more time so we get it right in the notes?
Okay, that's the nationally registered and internationally registered marks from all jurisdictions, FREM, including countries where there is no substantive review, will be included in the database. Also, common law rights that have been validated by a court decision will also be may also be included.
Okay, thank you.
I think we also have agreement, maybe not, but I thought we also had agreement that all of these rights would be used in the IP claims.
Wait a minute. That's use. That's different.
I was trying to add another area. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, let's hold off. identical match is the next box. The question excluding the business community, business stakeholder group. Does anyone want to comment on this? Do we have a consensus then as to the Zahid?
Thank you. One of the things I did over the last 2 days was actually speak to other IRT members, some of them who were brand holders, and they remember, and I just want to clarify for the record, that there was a difference between what was expected to be covered in the narrow definition of identical match for the GPML, and that was fine because it was going to be much narrow, and the understanding that the IP claims definition of match would be very different. I think this may not have come through, but it's something that when I spoke to other people, they agreed with what I had said. And I'd just like to reiterate that you could easily gain this by simply doing this post-launch in the first 30 seconds.
Kathy.
I just wanted to say that when we drafted, when Jeff and I went through this and worked through it, we did go back to the IRT report in the clearinghouse sections. So there may have been things that the IRT hadn't documented, and Zahid has talked to me about some of these, but just wanted to share that was our point of reference when we started.
Anyone else? Do we have a consensus then on the question of identical match, the meaning of identical match? Apparently we do. Then let's go to the question of mandatory pre-launch use. Is there still an open question on that? I don't see any hands, so apparently.
Wait, it's Jeff Eckhouse. I just have one question. I'm just looking at the boxes here. I'm reading the minority position that people are going to put that in themselves. We're just saying we're coming to consensus on this, correct? That it's mandatory?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
That's my understanding. Alan.
Yeah, I think we need to note that there's some sort of disagreement, not compromise, on how the clearinghouse would be used for Sunrise.
Okay. Then the next issue is the voluntary use of the trademark clearinghouse. Do we have a consensus here?
This is John. Can I get in the queue?
Please, go ahead.
Thanks. We might want to call this something else, because if we read what we write here in the column that talks about the proposal or the consensus, it's not really voluntary use of the clearinghouse itself, right? We're talking about it doesn't bar the service provider or other providers to offer ancillary services that are outside the clearinghouse.
That's my understanding. Anyone else? Jeff Newman.
Yeah, hi. Hi, guys. We may want to explain what we mean by ancillary service. You understand what it means because we've been talking about this, but who just picks up this document, they're not going to know what that means at all.
Do you want to propose some language?
Well, I mean, I want to hear from the group as to what services they were thinking about, because I wasn't really involved with this part. So whoever came up with that language, can you explain that?
I don't see any hands going up.
Yeah, this is John. I didn't come up with that language by any means, but in the past in these calls, we've talked about, you know, common law rights, for example. If they want to have if this same service provider wants to provide information about common law trademark rights, they should be able to do that. If they want to provide information about, you know, post-launch activities like many do now, they should be able to do that.
It's Alan. If I can interrupt, Jeff Newman just is on the Adobe Room setting. Joined. Is he also on the call?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah. So the question I have, though, is it says that I guess so we can put those in as examples. That's probably a good idea. Just so when someone picks this up and they understand what we mean. It also says, but information needs to be stored in a separate database. Do we want to be the IRC is much more strict about this. Do we want to basically say that they can only use the data to the extent that others can use that data? They can only use the data in the clearinghouse to the extent others use the data in the clearinghouse. In other words, they should not have some sort of monopoly right over the data that's in there, and they can't use that data in the clearinghouse except as anyone else would be able to use that data. That makes sense?
No.
So you don't want to give a competitive advantage because they're also the clearinghouse provider.
Right. So in other words, for example, Neustar is the North American Numbering Portability Administrator. We maintain the registry of phone numbers, if you will. But we can also be a user of that database, but we can only be a user of the database to the extent that everyone else is allowed to be a user. We have no superior rights to use the database just by virtue of our being the database administrator. So similarly, like this, if you are the clearinghouse, you should not have any right to use the data in the clearinghouse above and beyond the rights that other parties have to use that data, except for performing the functions that we, you know, mandate here. So in other words, if they want to provide a trademark watch service and they want to use the data that's in the clearinghouse, they can only do so to the extent that any other provider could come in and use that data within the clearinghouse, just like they can.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Jeff Eckhouse.
Okay, well, first off, Jeff, thanks for clearing that up. That actually does make a lot more sense. And here's my question on that is, just I know this is silly, but if you're saying that, like, let's use your Neustar example, you would still be able to license that data and charge a fee to access that database. Is that correct?
You mean as a number portability administrator?
So let's use your number portability or some of the other, like the watch services. So you're saying that if Jeff's clearinghouse is the one who wins this service and I want to offer a watch service and then say, Kathy also wants to offer a watch service. I can license her that data, you're saying, but it would have to be the same exact data that I'm using, correct?
Yeah, I'm being a little careful here because you'd essentially have to give it to them for free, just like you. In other words, Jeff's Clearinghouse gets the clearinghouse. Let's say subsidiary of Jeff's Clearinghouse wants to offer Jeff's watch service. Jeff's watch service would have to license that data on the same terms and conditions that anybody else would have to be offered the same terms and conditions.
Okay,
so
No, that's what I was getting at. That's what I meant, yeah. So, but you would be able to license it out to other people, but if I decided to do it, I would have to pay that, as my own subsidiary would have to pay the same terms and conditions, and I would have the same access to that database as everyone else who licensed it. Nothing proprietary that I could hold back is what you're stating, correct?
Yeah, and I would add, though, in most cases, that data would have to be given out for free instead of a paid license, because in this case, you'd have a monopoly provider. Someone's got to control the pricing of how you license out that data. So either it's for free or it's a set price that's established and approved by ICANN or whatever. But you can't just let them charge a huge amount, you know, unregulated.
Can I get in the queue, Tim?
Yeah, go ahead. Mark has ahead of you.
I'm sorry.
I just wanted to look at this from the principle of making this a cost-effective system from the user. So I hope we accomplish the goal that there's one place that data is put, and if that data is relevant to another registry in the future, it doesn't have to be resubmitted, but it's in the database. So there, you know, therefore it's cheaper to be used.
Okay, thank you. Zahid.
The BC would support that position. I think that creates competition, and I agree with the set price thing. But also like to caution that, yes, the price should be reasonable enough to be able to be used. Thank you.
Alan?
Two very short comments. With respect to what Mark said, I assume there is going to be an annual renewal fee or something like that, not just necessarily a one-time fee. The other question is, we've been talking about the clearinghouse licensing the data perhaps for free to other people. That presumes that every mark holder that registered has already allowed it to do that, which I'm not quite sure it's going to. So it may be a hypothetical discussion.
John.
Yeah, I think this is a level of detail we absolutely do not need to go in. The principle, I think, that what Jeff articulated, which is a good one, is that the provider of the trademark clearinghouse should not be in a competitive advantage to any other provider in providing these ancillary services. I mean, we could word that better, obviously, but, I mean, that's all we need to say, I would think, in the report, and we don't have to get into the detail of pricing or anything else that we've just been talking about for the last few minutes.
This is Amy, if I might, David.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I would agree with that completely, John. Thank you. I was just about to jump in on this. I think we should avoid the discussion of the pricing and the principal concept of making sure everybody's on the equal playing field is fine. We should avoid any discussion of setting prices.
Yeah. Kathy?
To take it in a totally different direction for just a second, one of the things I wanted to make sure that we had agreed that I think we've talked about, and to see if there's any disagreement and then whether we should put it in writing, is another use of the database, which is that, and particularly in IP claims notice, that the registrant who is being provided with notice of these trademarks have the right to access them, and hopefully even the links in the claims notice, the links to access those specific registrations or specific forms within the clearinghouse. I would think at no cost, something that they could click over and reference. Is that something that anyone would object to putting language in, that the clearinghouse should, on a case-by-case basis, make this available to the registrants for access and use in their researching their domain names?
Anyone want to comment on that? John, you have your hand up.
Sorry, I'll take it down. But to answer your question, it'd be depending on cost. If it's not cost prohibitive, sure, that makes sense.
Alan?
Yeah, that's also somewhat related to something we talked about a very little bit before, of using the clearinghouse to give the URS provider information about the mark of the claimant.
Okay. Kathy?
I don't know what Paul was thinking when we drafted it. I know when I drafted the notice, this was something that actually we talked about it in Seoul at the big panel on Wednesday in Seoul. And who is the chairman of the IRT? Christina? Seemed to like the idea as well of accessing things. That she was the one who called it a case-by-case basis of registrants going in so that they could check and verify the data within the database, within the clearinghouse. So I know I drafted the notice with that kind of access in mind, and presumably not access for cost, that you can kind of go forward and pull out a few records in the clearinghouse, even if the whole of the clearinghouse wasn't made public, that you could pull out those records that are being referenced in the IP claims. So, again, I drafted the notice with that in mind.
Okay, thank you. Can we move along then to item number 7? The voluntary use of the trademark clearinghouse post-launch. And I see consensus in the first box. Zahed.
Yes, I've said this on previous calls as well. We support post-launch as well, as I just mentioned earlier. Otherwise, it doesn't help us putting the names into the IT clearinghouse. So, as I said, the two main concerns were post-launch and the narrow identical match. And so we wouldn't provide consensus to this.
Okay. Thank you. Then moving along.
David, it's Alan. The notes are talking about the clearinghouse should not have an advantage under the voluntary post-launch, whereas I think we were talking about it also pre-launch. I think we were talking about it under number 6, were we not?
Oh, yes, I think you're right on that.
Yeah, we were talking about it for any ancillary services.
Yeah, so post-launch and pre-launch.
And the notes will now reflect that. Thank you. Okay, that we get to number 8. Kathy and Paul, do you want to address this, the required elements?
Go ahead, Paul.
Sure. I mean, I think the draft notice that we sent around attempted to accommodate everything in this third column. We didn't hear any negative feedback from anybody, and so other than the tweaking that Kathy and I need to do to point out that not all jurisdictions examine the same that we talked about earlier today, I think we're done with this unless someone has an objection to the draft.
I see no hands raised, which is a good thing.
David?
Yeah.
Paul, what were you thinking of in terms of the access to the clearinghouse by the registrant when they get the IP claims notice? Were you thinking links over to that as well?
Well, we were thinking that the goods and services, there needed to be a link to the goods and services because those would, unless they were just a few items, would easily exceed the field size that we anticipate in the notice, because we don't want the notice to be 50 pages. We want it to be, one or two, something useful. So I guess there is some access back for that.
Does anybody oppose putting that in writing, some access back, so we can have a very clear, brief notice, and then someone can get the full details from the clearinghouse?
There are a couple of hands up there, but is there any objection to that?
Well, I think, this is Jeff Newman, and my hand is raised, and this also relates to my point. I'm not so sure. I mean, I'm fine with providing access to registrants. Let me put that up. But I'm not so sure that we should, in the draft that you guys put forth, you guys have a click here if maximum character count is exceeded. You have things in there that are really implementation details. I think those types of things should really be for the clearinghouse to figure out how to implement. I think we're a little too prescriptive on how they should do things. I think the notice at the beginning, the language at the beginning, I think that's right. And I think afterwards we should probably say that they should list these things, these categories for every mark. But I think other than that and dictating how short it should be or which part are links and how they link, I think we should really leave that to implementation of the clearinghouse.
Okay, Alan.
Yeah, I make my standard comment that we have to factor in language. Both the registries may be working in a lot of unusual languages, and I don't know whether on IP claims if it's done through registrars or directly with the registry. Maybe someone can Jeff can clarify on the one that's already been done.
So on the one that was already done, it was done through the registry.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean it has to be done that way in the future. There are other ways it can be done.
Okay. Certainly, registries are going to work in different languages, and if it's done through registrars, the potential registrant, may be working in a different language than the registry, and we have to make sure that that's not forgotten as we go forward.
Hey, Kathy.
Good. Alan raises a good point. Just asking the note taker to reflect that the drafters of the notice did envision links to the clearinghouse for further detail, kind of an abbreviated material on the IP claims notice, and then the link to get the full data.
Oh, thank you.
Or instead of saying links, you just should have access to the full data. It's in theory possible to do that in other ways other than links. So that's what I mean. We should set forth the principle that they should have access to the full set of data and then let the clearinghouse figure out a way to implement that.
Great.
Okay. Moving along then to number 9, where I think there is consensus. The effect of filing, it clearly stated that inclusion is not proof of any rights, nor does it confer legal rights. Do we need further comment on that? That brings us to the 10th point, the cost of operating the clearinghouse. Kathy, your hand is up. Is that?
I'm sorry. Let me take that down.
Oh, okay. There's a question mark here, Alan. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think we last time made a clear statement that we do not expect ICANN to put any money into this process at all. So, we are not construing as ICANN as one of the users, one of the parties utilizing the services. And we may want to say something in the opposite also, that we're not expecting the clearinghouse to provide funds to ICANN, but I'm not sure that's as important.
Hey, Zahid.
I'm just wondering, and I could be wrong, but I think that there was some discussion previously about finding out what the costs usually are associated with registries doing, pre-launches, et cetera, and if we could get that information, that may be helpful in deciding who bears the cost, et cetera, and I'm just wondering, is that information available, one. Secondly, as in the email that was circulated earlier, some of the views that are in there show that the BC would obviously, if trademark holders want a sharing of the cost because they feel, or at least I think, minus any, or, any information that comes forward, that registries also gain from this.
Jeff, go ahead.
Well, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I disagree with Zahid, and so did the IRT. So I think, the users were envisioned to be the trademark owners, not the registries. The registries were being forced to implement this. If the costs were being borne by the registries, then presumably the registries should be able to charge extra for it. But one of the whole purposes of this was to lower the costs for trademark owners. So, again, I strongly object to what Zahid is saying, and, the IRT rejected Zahid's point as well.
Alan?
Yeah, I sent out a note a while ago on this. The IRT report said that certain services should not be borne by the registries. It didn't say anything about who does pay, and I have a strong concern that if the trademark holders pay once or annually for putting the mark in the clearinghouse, there is no billing that's proportional to the number of launches that there are, whether there's two a year or 4,000 a year. And although the registries should perhaps shouldn't pay any money out of their own pocket, they may be the right way to bill the trademark holders, you know, going through them. I can resend my note if someone wants to. I just think that there's an untenable situation if the registries aren't involved in the process, whether it's passed through or sort of out of their own bottom line.
Zahid?
Yeah, thank you. First of all, I'd just like to thank Alan for that comment. I agree with him about the IRT's language. I'm looking through it now to get more information on that so I can share it on the list. However, let's not forget the IRT, the IP Clearinghouse, was actually an adjunct to the GPML. And so it's a very different ballgame right now. So the reasons for which there may have been consensus within the IRT do not necessarily apply today.
Okay. Jeff. No one.
Well, but that's not true, Zahid. The cost of the clearinghouse being paid by trademark owners had nothing to do with the discussions we had on GPML. You can't just say that because we're not adopting everything the IRT did, that everything the IRT said is out the window. I mean, the clearinghouse team did consider this, and the other thing we really need to consider also is that part of the reason we're introducing new TLDs is to introduce competition with .com, .biz, .info, all the others. And if you're going to handicap registries with making them pay to this clearinghouse, forcing them to increase the price of their registrations, I really feel like you're going to be hampering new competition, and that really needs to be considered.
Okay, thank you. Mark?
I suggested this concept last time, and I'll suggest it again. Maybe utilizing isn't the right verb, but it seems to me in principle that it's fair for parties who benefit from this should pay. And to the extent brand holders, obviously, they benefit. But I don't know that we need to decide, but I think that it may be the case that registries, registrars, and perhaps others benefit, and it would be fair for them to pay to the extent they benefit.
And URS providers, if they provide a service to them?
Oh, and ICANN. ICANN is one of the biggest benefits of this clearinghouse, if you think about it.
Hey, Jeff Feckhaus.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little confused as as a registrar, how am I a beneficiary? If somebody could just explain that. I'm a little unsure of what the benefits are, how I'm a beneficiary, and why I would need to pay. If someone could just explain that.
I guess I used the word, and I don't know that you do benefit. If you didn't benefit, you would need to pay. But I think the principle is that the people who do benefit would be the ones who pay, not necessarily utilize. People might have to utilize it, but it's no benefit to them.
Mark.
That was Mark.
Oh, I'm sorry. Zahid.
Thank you. Just 2 points. One, if Jeff, you could point out in the IRT report where that was said about the costs should not be borne by the registries, that would be one, just a question. Second, I think that on the previous call, I think somebody mentioned saying lower administrative costs, lower consultancy costs, things of that nature. Somebody mentioned that, as I think it's on record. So unless that's not true, and I think somebody did say that maybe we would look into the costs associated with launch for registries, maybe somebody can bring us some information on that.
So to answer Zahid's question of where in the report, unfortunately I'm not, I don't have the report up in front of me, but I know it says it in at least two different places in the clearinghouse section within the first couple pages. If you want, I get to my computer, I could find it. I know Alan saw it as well.
I think I pointed to the paragraphs in my email also.
That would be great, Jeff. Thanks.
Okay. Well, we've arrived at the... there, does somebody want to speak?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify, where do we end up on number 10?
Divided.
Well, the statement costs should be completely borne by parties utilizing the services, and the statement ICANN is not expected to fund costs of the clearinghouse the clearinghouse is not to fund ICANN. I think we have consensus on that. We have no consensus on the meaning of the phrase parties utilizing the services. Any comment on that?
Yeah, this is Jeff. To the extent that parties utilizing the service includes the registries, yeah, I object to that, and the registries object to that.
Speaking as a registry, I concur. Alan?
Yeah, I need some clarification. I keep on raising the issue of that there's going to be a cost to the clearinghouse roughly proportional or increasing with the number of launches that there are. How does the registry, how does the clearinghouse get remunerated for that? I would have thought it makes sense to charge the trademark holders, but do it through the registry, because that's, they're already doing bill, they're already, it, you know, it's one transaction per registry instead of 1,000 or 100,000. It's still the trademark holder paying the bill, but doing it through the registry seems to make more sense. And I'm not hearing how that would work.
Well, it wouldn't work through the registries, right? Because if there's 10 registries that launch all around the same time that have a sunrise period, then are you saying charge the trademark owner 10 times? I mean, how would you do that? I think to get the information in the clearinghouse, it's a one-time charge, and I think we need to provide the, you know, in an RFP for a clearinghouse, the clearinghouse is going to need to come forward and explain how it will be funded. Using the rules that it's not through, you know, so it's going to have to do a business model. It's going to have to do an analysis. But it can't be through the registry because, you know, if you have, like I said, 10 launching at once, how does that work?
But they're going to have to deal with 10 registries if there are 10 launches.
Well, I'm saying that the trademark owner is going to get charged 10 times for the same thing. And that was one of the things we were trying to avoid.
If they get 10 sunrises out of it, that makes sense.
Zahid.
Thank you. I'm looking at the IRB report, and I'm looking at page number 3, and I'm looking at one section saying benefits for trademark owners. I'm looking at another one which says benefits for new GTLD registry operators, and it says the clearinghouse will reduce registry liability, and well, the post-delegate mechanism will impact only on bad actors. So, I mean, there's a whole paragraph on that. It also talks about the benefits for registrars. So I would concur with Mark's phrases of, you know, characterization of benefits. And I think the benefit's right there. I mean, I think when you say you reduce liability, it has a cost implication.
Zahid, you need to read a little further down where it says that there is no cost to the registries.
But there's a benefit, right?
There's a benefit to ICANN. There's a benefit to registrants. There's a benefit. I mean, I do not necessarily agree. I mean, David, you asked before. This is Newman. I do not agree that we should put a statement in saying ICANN should not pay. I don't think we should rule that out. And I'm not sure why this group would be doing that.
This is Hyde. Can I just respond just very, very quickly? Okay. When you reduce liability, doesn't it reduce a whole bunch of things and financials and insurance coverage and a whole bunch of other things?
Sorry, Sahid, was that a question? I missed part of it.
Yeah, that's the question. It says here it will reduce registry liability, and I'm just wondering, doesn't that have a financial implication?
Sahid, this was all considered by the IRT. I hear what you're saying. And that was all brought up, and the IRT as a group decided no.
Well, I think we may have arrived at an impasse on this. So there is clearly a lack of consensus, and I think that the views are pretty clear, and they'll have to be expressed as minority statements.
Hey, David, this is Jeff. Page 15 of the IRT, or final IRT report, the IRT intends that each of the services described below, which is the clearinghouse, shall be provided by the IP clearinghouse at no charge to the GTLD registries or registrars that are required to interact with the IP clearinghouse to implement the recommended RPMs. If a new GTLD registry decides to implement RPM above and beyond those recommended herein, any incremental services necessitated thereby shall be provided on no greater than a cost-plus basis to the new registry. And then there's another place that talks about that as well.
Okay, thank you. Well, I think we now have a pretty clear statement of what the IRT said. That doesn't necessarily resolve the problem here today in light of what Zahid is saying. So I'll go back to my statement that I think this has to be the subject of a minority statement. I'll have to withdraw my statement that part of the consensus is that ICANN is not expected to fund costs, because we don't have consensus on that either.
What do we have consensus on? Because I don't agree with the word utilizing. I mean, ICANN was the one who created that language in their in the DAG, or not the DAG, in the memo that they did. But that was not the language the IRT used, and so I don't think there's even consensus on the word utilizing. If I'm wrong, let me know. If everyone else agrees that there is consensus on that, we should explain what we mean by utilizing, and then if I need to draft a minority statement, I will.
Well, John?
I'm with the word utilizing. You could delete the word completely. Costs should be borne by the parties utilizing the services, and I would leave it at that. I don't think we need a bunch of minority statements, but Jeff, if you feel like compelled to do that, go for it. It seems obvious what that means to me, and if you have a position that you want a specific reference that registries won't bear any cost, then that probably won't get consensus either. We should just leave it the way it is there, and it's vague, high level, and any cost borne by the registries is going to be passed on anyway. So to me, this is an irrelevant issue.
Okay. I don't see any other hands raised. I think at this point we have to turn it over to the staff to do a draft report. And the sooner we can see the draft, the better, which is, I'm sure, obvious. We'll have to get something, either a rough draft or perhaps even a final report in the hands of the GNSO Council on Monday. Failing that, we'll ask for a little more time. Alan.
Yeah, David, do we want to tentatively schedule a meeting for Monday or Tuesday in case we need it? If we try to do it on Monday, it'll be too late.
John?
No, I just wanted to ask if we could get consensus on that last point. I mean, if we had a high-level statement like that, do we get a significant number of the groups that would approve that? I see in their notes that they have lack of consensus on costs. I'm not sure if that's true or not.
Well, John, you said, if I can ask one quick question, you said it's obvious what the parties utilizing means. In your mind, does that mean registries and trademark owners?
Well, everyone's obviously there'll be some cost. Maybe I shouldn't use the word obviously. There'll be some cost in this whole system borne by registries, right? There'll be internal resources, setting up the systems, all the other stuff that you would have to do to work with a trademark clearinghouse. I wouldn't be comfortable saying that registry should no cost. Any cost that you as a registry would bear would be factored into the price, and that's just pure economics. So from my perspective, cost should be borne by the parties utilizing the services. I'm not sure what's objectionable to that.
I guess we're talking about different things that would cost. I agree with you as far as internal costs that a registry has to develop in order to interact with the clearinghouse. That's that's a registry's cost. But I was thinking more in terms of paying the clearinghouse a fee for the data or for the right to connect. That's what I'm afraid is meant by that statement.
Even a basic servicing fee, Jeff? This is Kathy.
Yeah, in reading that statement, the first thing, I actually didn't even think about it from the angle that John just said, which is that registries should bear their own costs to interact with the clearinghouse, which I agree with that. What I don't agree with is that the registry should have to pay, you know, for each, let's say, registration that someone does, that the trademark owner pays, and then the registry has a transactional fee that it pays to the clearinghouse. I don't agree with that. And that's what I'm worried about the statement being interpreted as.
One question, Jeff, this is John. One question that came up in the last meeting call that I think you weren't on was, you know, what's happened in the current marketplace in the last, you know, five or so launches? Does the registry pay Deloitte or whatever provider that it has used, or has Deloitte's fees only come from the registrants?
Most, the ones that I've implemented with Deloitte, it's that Deloitte has charged a fee, that everything was collected through the registry. Now, remember, there was no central clearinghouse, so each registry had to procure its own validator. The registry collected all the funds, but the registry generally did not mark up the fee that Deloitte charged. So Deloitte charges a validation fee, and then the registry passes that through. But if there's going to be one clearinghouse and one validation, then there's no need to get the registry involved. Then the registry is just doing an ordinary registration, and that's it. The whole reason behind this was to avoid excessive charging and avoid the fact that, you know, trademark owners should only have to pay once to have their stuff validated, and then really, basically, it's just a regular registration fee. For Sunrise, anyway.
All right. Zahid?
So I'm just wondering, I understand what Jeff is saying. I mean, that do we let the IP clearinghouse charge whatever it wants, the per transaction or per query against the registry, the new GTLD, sorry. What about cost recovery basis, charging on the basis of cost recovery?
Who charging on the basis of cost recovery?
The IP clearinghouse? Charging the registries?
For what cost?
For recovering its costs.
Well, it seems to me that just changes the amount. It doesn't change the principle. Jeff Eckhouse?
Okay.
Yeah, let me just jump in. I would caution against any sort of cost recovery plan because there is such an issue of people gold plating or stacking up what their costs are, and then that would need audits and other pieces. So I please caution against from any sort of cost basis, cost recovery sort of model because it will tend to spiral into a complete nightmare.
Alan?
Yeah, I guess I'd like a statement from Jeff or someone on how the clearinghouse could ever be imagined to be a viable operation if they charge a one-time fee for the registration to the trademark holder and then have to deal with as many registries as may exist over the next couple of years on a regular basis. That doesn't seem to be a sustainable model. And
sure,
maybe I'm missing something. But
yeah, so if I can answer that. I didn't say they couldn't charge a renewal fee every year. And basically, Alan, that's how a registry works, right? In the domain name world, the registry charges the registrar a one-time fee for a registration, and then one time again upon renewal, and the registry has to deal with as many registrars that come to it that it get approved by ICANN. That's the nature of a registry.
I understand that, but here we have a clearinghouse that is going to be working with a variable number of new launches a year, and I don't understand how they can sustain that load without having a charge that increases as the load increases. But maybe I'm just dumb. Okay.
Margie, you got a comment?
Yeah, actually, I was going to say something similar to Alan, that, I mean, from an implementation standpoint, we may have difficulties with identifying a service provider who's not willing, you know, who's only willing to provide it on a cost recovery basis. So, I mean, it's really up to Kurt and Amy and that team, but, you know, that may be a concern of theirs.
Okay. At this point, I'd like to address that issue of having a call on Monday. For one thing, I am not available on Monday. Also, I personally believe it's a mistake to have a further teleconference on this. Our job right now is to produce a written report. We're going to have a draft. It's pretty clear that on some significant issues, there are going to be minority statements. I think it's much better to get the draft, have people look at it, offer revisions, prepare minority statements where necessary. This procedure is pretty clearly not going to come to an end with our initial report to the council. I'm not sure where all this is going. It wouldn't surprise me that probably following the holidays there will be further proceedings. ICANN appears to have adopted a pretty flexible approach to these complex issues. Some of you may be aware of security, high security program and the zone file access, where the normal procedures have been totally disrupted by the formation of new expert teams. I just offer that parenthetically, but it appears to me that we've done what we can do by teleconference. And my suggestion is that we concentrate on a first report, which we owe to the council. And I think at this point, let's go ahead and do that. Any comments on that?
No, I can live with that.
Good. If that's it, then over to you, staff. We anxiously await your draft.
Yeah, I'll be writing away.
Okay, I just wanted to be sure you hadn't fainted that away.
No, I know that. I do have a question, though. We talked about this before. You know, is it just consensus, no consensus, or can I try to break it down through, you know, consensus, broad consensus, rough consensus, a little bit, you know, of nuances, or would you just prefer me to, you know, keep it simple?
I would prefer simple, but Zahid, go ahead.
Yeah, just wondering, I mean, how does that work? If the BC hasn't agreed to anything, does it still mean that if it's the only one, there's still consensus, and would that be represented as the word consensus?
I think we ought not to get into that, Margie. I would suggest there's either consensus or there's not. This is an area where people will be able to file minority statements and trying to multiply categories here, I think, would be a big mistake.
Okay, but I still need clarification, because what is consensus? Unanimous or roughly, you know, three-quarters?
Well,
I mean, what do you guys say consensus? I just need to understand that.
Well, I think as you look through these boxes that we've looked at, it's pretty clear where there is consensus and where there is not. Zahid?
Sorry, just my point that my view would be that if one of the members of this group doesn't agree, then that there shouldn't be a consensus.
Yeah, I would be inclined to say that you can't say there's a consensus where whether it's the business stakeholder group or the IP stakeholders or the registries or registrars or non-commercial have objected. Paul?
Do you think it's okay to say in the where she says no consensus and then list the stakeholder groups that have rejected the...
Yeah, no, I think that's reasonable. John?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I like to disagree with that, David. I think in the recent history of GNSO, gosh, the policy discussions, consensus didn't mean unanimity. And to the extent we want to give vetoes on consensus to every group, I think it's a problem. So I think, you know, if we talk about consensus, if it's every group but one, you still have consensus. You still note that, you know, a group disagreed with that. But it's, we should not make consensus unanimity. I think that's a big mistake and inconsistent with what we've done in the GNSO and less things that I've been involved in.
Robin.
Thank you. Yes, I just wanted to agree with that statement that, you know, we've always been told that consensus is not unanimity. And, I'll give as an example the new GTLD policy that went through the GNSO a couple of years ago. The non-commercial users did not agree with it, and we were repeatedly told that it would still be called a consensus policy, that consensus does not mean unanimity. So unless we're changing that standard now, then, you know, we should have that discussion. But otherwise, it seems to me that we need to stick with what we've done in the past in terms of what consensus means, and it is not unanimity.
Okay, Margie, what if you make a judgment where you believe there is consensus, say so, but it still allows minority statements? Does that work?
I'm hearing some background. I do have a question, though.
There's some terrible interference on the line.
Okay. Well, what I was going to say was that working group guidelines that we've been putting together got several definitions of on the it's we've got unanimous consensus and then we've got strong support and no consensus. Those are the categories that have come from the working group guidelines. Is that an appropriate approach to take with this report?
After hearing the comments, it's signed by me. Mark, I think you had your hand up. Apparently Mark is off. Alan?
Yeah, I was
go ahead, Alan. I'm sorry.
Okay. I was just going to say something similar to what Margie said. I think it's useful to the board and staff if we could flag the ones that are truly unanimous as unanimous consensus, and I'm not sure we need to differentiate between the other kinds as much, but it certainly would be useful where there is unanimity to say so.
Okay. Zahid?
I'd agree with what has just been copy-pasted on the chat by Margie, that's a great approach.
Okay. Jeff Newman?
Hi, I got dropped for a sec, so I don't know if this point was raised. Remember, just Margie, just be careful in this, because not all of us have gotten our constituencies, you know, completely on board with all of this stuff, right? We're working as individuals, hopefully effectively representing our constituencies, but just make it clear that it would be a consensus of this group as opposed to a consensus of the Internet community. Or as opposed to, like, I don't want my voice to be, oh, well, Jeff agrees, so therefore the registries automatically agree. And I'm sure the others feel the same way.
Okay. Jeff Eckhouse.
Yeah, two things. One, I agree with what the comments were going on, but I'm assuming that isn't there something in ICANN policy, if we're always working on what we call consensus policies, that there's an official definition of what consensus means within somewhere within, you know, so the ICANN storeroom somewhere of what that definition is?
Can I have the link?
And wait, yeah, and if there is not, then why don't we just, you know, use the put the definitions in the front and saying, you know, rough consensus, unanimous consensus, even though I do believe, like, the official definition of consensus is an agreement to move forward, not unanimous. But
I think Margie has already answered that.
Yeah, it's in flux right now because we're changing as a result of the restructuring. So, you know, that's why the working group is looking at it and coming up with guidelines. But I could certainly clarify what I'm, you know, what standards I'm using. And I will clarify to answer the other point that it's not a consensus of the Internet stakeholders. It's just simply the, you know, the participants in this group because it's still going to go to the GNSO for their vote.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. We're now out of time, but Mark and Alan have your hands up.
I'll withdraw. Just.
Alan?
I was just going to make a comment that's a fitting end. ICANN has the same definition of consensus as we do for stakeholder and constituency. As many times as we use the word, that's how many definitions we have.
Okay. Jeff, you have your hand up. One last word.
Oh, sorry. I didn't put it down from before.
Okay. Well, thank you all. We have a lot of work to do on the report, and we'll talk tomorrow on the URS.
Good luck, Margie.
Yeah.
And bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye,
thank you, David. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy.